Hello and welcome to Relevant Tones. I am your host today, Austin Williams. I am particularly excited about this episode. We're about to go on a journey with. We're talking with Eric Fratsky today, a composer, multi-instrumentalist, improviser, just overall awesome artist and human. I had such a blast chatting with him, and I only wish I could share more of the conversation that we had, but alas, we only have as much time as we do. Speaking of that, though, if you care to listen to the full conversation, it will be made available on our Patreon. Please go check out our Patreon. You can either Google just Relevant Tones Patreon or patreon.com/relevanttones. And without much more rambling, I will allow Eric to introduce himself and all the lovely projects and music that he makes. Why don't we just start things off? Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us, you know, obviously your name, maybe a little bit about yourself, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
My name is Eric Fratsky. I am a bassist and guitarist, composer, educator. Playing mostly improvised music in the Twin Cities, and I do lots of other stuff too, but that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it.
Like I mentioned, I grew up, now it's my turn to talk about how I know about you. I grew up listening to all the various groups that you play with, Happy Apple, Trucking Company, and just being really engrossed in this like free improvised music scene that Minneapolis seems to curate and nurture so nicely. It's always great seeing the variety of projects that you're doing. And it really, what I love is you're not bound by one style of improvising or even genre, which is largely what I kind of want to talk about with you today.
Yeah.
Is the plurality of your stuff. So, I'll just start it off with, obviously, like a language, you know, an improvised language you use a lot is the jazz improvised language, but you also like dip your toes in like a lot of non-idiosyncratic languages as well. And I was wondering if you can maybe speak on just different approaches and like what, you know, how different groups kind of lean more towards one or the other kind of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's actually really simple when you, because I've thought about this a lot, because I know one person that grew up totally immersed in jazz.
Yeah. Yep.
Everyone else that I know, that's at least of my generation,
mm-hmm.
grew up with a large variety, loving all kinds of music, mm-hmm. and kind of having them all be on the same plane.
Yeah.
And really for me, that started with my mom's record collection.
Yeah.
And once I got interested in music when I was 9, like really interested, and I didn't realize that her collection was a little more eclectic than a lot of my friends.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so she had a lot of typical stuff of early Beatles, early Stones, mm-hmm. early Bob Dylan, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But she also had a Miles Davis record, a Ravi Shankar record.
Oh, yeah.
A Mingus record.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't a jazz head per se.
Yeah.
But there was a few records like that in there, and probably a few other things I'm forgetting. So almost right off the bat, it was kind of like the message was, I didn't realize it so much, was like, here's all this music. It's all in this collection.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're drawing from.
Yeah.
Like, even though I can have specific likes and things that really spoke to me, it was I think there was still a strong kind of message there,
and it's that whole like like good music is good music. I think that was like a Duke Ellington quote or something along those lines of just like, you know, it's good when it's good. And genre is and aesthetic is kind of an afterthought. At least for me, you know, I was actually just talking to someone about this recently. Like if there is an aesthetic that you enjoy in music, but it doesn't define like the genre and you find it in other, you know, genres of music, then like you're probably going to be gravitated towards those aesthetics or those, you know, that specific moment kind of thing.
Yeah. I would, you know, even maybe looking at it more broadly now.
Yeah.
And thank you for giving me this opportunity because sometimes these things happen like literally in the conversation, not like a list that I have in my head. I'm going to illuminate a listener, but it's almost like the fact that those are in a collection together in a society where we hear about pop music mm-hmm. a lot, which mm-hmm. I love. And I mean, I wouldn't be here without it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that you could see them all in a collection kind of says these are all important, equally important things. And it's not till later that you kind of figure out that we hear about certain kinds of music a lot.
Yeah.
From society. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was really important was like, oh, this Ravi Shankar language is as important as this over here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, sometimes it takes a really long time to really appreciate that that's what happens. And I think sets up what you're talking about later on with different improvisational approaches with different groups mm-hmm. is, I mean, there was a period where I like you sit and you apply yourself to learning a jazz language.
Yeah. Yeah.
But ultimately it kind of comes back to, it's almost like I wanted to get some fluency in all those things in my mom's record collection. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say I know what, you know, the tradition of Indian music.
Right.
We'll be right back. Yep. I think once you spend enough time, like if we're talking about jazz or improvised music, I think once you reach a certain amount of fluency, all of those influences are going to show themselves. Cause now it's like, you feel comfortable with a little bit of, you know, I'm doing my fretboard stuff. Generally, this is how this language is put together, and I can interface with it and have, I feel like I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I can relax about, if I want to say, the legitimacy of my playing it, or acknowledging the tradition, or those type of things. And then all those other things come in again. So it's almost like I'm going to pound this, I guess, but that it's like their record collection kind of came back up rather than it just being the jazz part. And of course you need people, you need to be in situations where your musical partners at least tacitly understand that.
And that's what I think I love about the, specifically like the Minneapolis, you know, jazz scene, is how well people know the language or are familiar with it, and then how much they're willing to impose themselves or their own influences on that, just because you're in a really unique, you know, part of, or like a really unique city where it was maybe a little isolated, like there wasn't a lot of stuff going on. It obviously has its own history of music and things like that, but you know, it wasn't considered a big city such as New York, LA, or Chicago, or you know, you know, New Orleans or whatever. And you know, it's funny because I'll tell people that like a lot of my improvised music, a lot of the influence comes from my early days of like, you know, the Minneapolis scene, and people kind of turn their head like, what are you talking about? You know, and then I usually give them like a list of bands to listen to, and I'm like, no, you need to check these guys out because they're doing, you know, they've been doing, you know, awesome things for, you know, 30 or so years, and it's fantastic, and it's you know, I think it's just a coincidence that it happens to be jazz adjacent. I think that, you know, it would have maybe happened regardless of you know, genre or like aesthetic. Just based on what I've experienced in the town.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I don't fully grasp why that is in Minneapolis. Well, and part of it is I grew up in an even smaller town a few hours away.
Sure.
So I wasn't immediately, I don't have that kind of intimacy of growing up in the city. And then, you know, just that kind of familiarity you get when you grow up in an urban area like
that.
Yeah. So I kind of came in when I was about 18. So, and you know, me moving to any big urban center of any size would have been like moving to New York. And so even now I don't really fully understand what it is that contributed. And as the years go on, I hear from different students and different musicians that I meet, like slightly older musicians, about there were all these other little things happening in the city that we'll kind of never know about. But little things were happening, and they have a cumulative effect, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we could talk for days about this, just because I love talking about that scene. I mean, just like a variety of the other projects you're doing, the album Four Serious Allegations, also your duo group Art House, taking film music and reimagining it.
Oh, yeah,
it,
you right.
Know? I really enjoy the work on that album. Maybe you want to talk about that that duo project for a little bit, who's involved and what's going on with that.
Yeah, originally I had a little idea to do a solo electric bass arrangements of some film music.
Mm-hmm.
And that just never got off the ground. I mean, I compiled ideas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing of like the process of sometimes you have this great idea and but you don't bring it to fruition.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I met in Plain and a few other groups around the Twin Cities. I met a young cornetist that I really hit it off with him aesthetically, and he had a very deep knowledge of a lot of avant and just was very open and knew a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I could tell it was kind of a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
And so then I shifted that idea into, well, let's try to take these very rich, like ensemble, if not orchestral, like most of the time ensemble pieces in these various films. And let's see if we can make them work in a duo with someone that's going to get that idea and is willing to try and stretch and can hear the concept
a
little bit. So it's one of those things, again, it's like you have to have these sympathetic partners.
Well, I mean, yeah, talk about you. Another thing I've, learned about you is you're just a wealth of knowledge or seemingly an endless well of, I've learned about a lot of artists through various, social media posts you've made about things. And it's so it goes. It's the lineage, someone that you respect artistically mentions something that you've never heard about. Then you're like, well, I should probably check this out, right? Because this probably has influenced them in some way. So you keep, shutting down the layers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that. I've done the same many, many. I still do it. Still do it.
Yeah.
I was just going to say it was the sources for the Art House film music stuff. I had eventually kind of got into art house film.
Yeah. I was going to say the title or the ensemble name's a little tongue in cheek, which I enjoyed.
Well, it's part of the aesthetic too.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And, as I kind of got into, watching all these films and kind of learning about all these different directors and different types of art house films, there at various points, there'd be very striking musical scores that would really pop out.
Of course.
And so that was the whole idea, was to grab some of these things.
Yeah.
Some of them are art house and some of them are classic horror films.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the 30s.
Oh yeah. 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 For sure.
Which are almost kind of art house adjacent at times, maybe.
I mean, that's a whole other, we could have a whole other episode. I love old horror movies. They're so, innovative is one way to put it, but they really stretched a lot of filmmaking and a lot of reasons why modern techniques are used is because of some of those early horror, stuff. It's pretty impressive, actually, how impactful they were.
I think the one thing that was really interesting to me was for, I don't know if it was King Kong, but idea of that, how they had to invent sounds for some of the creatures.
Yeah. Yep.
And how they would do that.
Yeah.
By basically taking other sounds and then layering them on top of each other.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if it was King Kong, but it was one of those things where they literally played it backwards.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was almost like a massive precursor to like some of the digital workstation things that are done all the time now.
Well, it's really fascinating. You can really start to see the influence of like a lot of music concrete, you know, techniques being implemented into that. And like, you know, all those guys were, well, maybe not all of them, but like those techniques probably eked their way into Hollywood somehow because everybody in the art field was connected in some capacity during that time. So it's just, well, you know what?
Yeah. I would say that the Hollywood stuff predates the music concrete.
Does it really? Yeah.
I would think so. I mean, I don't know it really intimately, but I think a lot of the stuff that I learned about was from the 30s.
Yeah. Some of the concrete stuff might have been in the 20s. But anyway, they were certainly around the same time, if not, you know, it's always interesting how the techniques, it doesn't matter like where you are in the world, it can kind of like people are thinking the same in a lot of ways for some reason, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, which is a really interesting thing to think about. And this is well before the internet, so. selfishly, I would love to end this talking about like Happy Apple or Trucking Company or something, or maybe any of those bands that are in that idiom.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, for sure. Because that's what I grew up listening to and watching you do. First of all, as I'm a bass player, congratulations being able to shred the bass and guitar equally as hard, because that's pretty f***ing incredible. that always blew my mind. But then also just really connecting with the groups and I don't want to say like different ways, but really impactful ways and through different means, if that makes sense. I always enjoyed going to those two different groups, because though they were similar, I knew I was going to be getting something very different, which I think is really impressive, given that the two members in the band are the same and you're able to express like wildly different things.
You know what? That's a good point. I have to give Dave King credit on that, because, well, first of all, like him asking me to be a part of Happy Apple.
Yeah.
I think he saw that I could be a voice in that band way before I understood that was possible.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same with the Trucking Company.
Mm-hmm.
Where he knew I played guitar. You know, there was one track on a Happy Apple record where I played guitar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Mike Lewis, the saxophonist, played upright bass.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And Dave saw that I could be a voice on guitar in kind of a jazz context. Because I hadn't really ever done that publicly at all.
Okay.
So I give him a lot of credit where he can really see those things in different people, which is why I think he plays with so many different musicians.
Yeah, for sure.
It's because he can see all these possibilities and really wants to experience all those different voices.
Yeah, I mean, that's a skill in itself. It's kind of like being an orchestrator, but, you know, really leaning into people's strengths, you know, that's super important to have a person like that around. We'll be right back.
it's been really a great treat to be able to have an improvised music thing where I'm playing bass in Happy Apple, mm-hmm. but then also having the trucking company where I get to experience the melodic side of things, playing guitar.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think that's like, you know, what I really gravitate towards in both ensembles is it's not completely free. In fact, it's quite formal a lot of times in terms of like, you know, you have melody, you have A section, B section, and then usually it digresses into something that's a bit more free and improvised. And there's obviously those moments, such as is in any jazz idiom, where you're going to have moments of improvisation. But the formal aspect of it, I think, was what allowed me as a younger musician to like really gravitate towards it and really grasp onto it and like realize like, okay, we can find chaos within this like formal music that we create as well, which, you know, I really enjoy.
Absolutely. That's always been an important part of the spectrum with those two bands is having tunes and having tunes that you'll improvise with form, and then having a tune that almost seems formless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're going to have tunes that are somewhere in between. And then even at points, one of those tunes could switch places.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was in Happy Apple, there was a tune that began as something with very much in a meter with a form. And within a few years, it became the exact opposite.
Oh, wild. Yeah, for sure.
And I'm not going to say which one it is, but okay. It actually has never been recorded. So,
okay. Yeah. Man, that's the other thing.
I shouldn't say that. I'd lose track. It might have been recorded.
Yeah. Well, I was just about to say, if you're listening to this, you're in Twin Cities area, you got to check out these bands because, you know, you can listen to their stuff online, but half the time I've heard charts I've never heard of before. When I go see you guys play, or you know, it's just different stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you can't get this, you know, online or anywhere. It might be recorded on someone's phone or something, but you know.
Yeah, Happy Apple has a huge list of tunes, the catalog. I mean, a lot of it is Dave King's tunes. He's so prolific.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we had a gig recently, just a couple of months ago. A month ago, and we were going back and forth trying to remember songs, just the songs we had forgotten.
Oh yeah.
Like we were trying to compile a list of a somewhat comprehensive list of our catalog.
Yeah.
And we had, each of us had remembered songs that the other one had completely forgotten about.
That's crazy.
And that's a real thing. So when we play, there's always tunes that we like to play, but we always try to grab some things that we haven't tried in years.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're that's part of the project of bringing some of those back.
Yeah, that's so cool. Just really throwing caution to the wind and just trusting each other musically and just being like, yeah, we got this, you know.
Because they are not written down.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not written down anywhere. And as a matter of fact, I had to pull one from a couple of them from cassettes.
Oh my God.
That I thought were lost. And that's a very interesting thing about how you document when you have a long running group, like how do you document what you do?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, modern technology has certainly made it easier, but at the same time, I think that there's what you are describing is such a unique and seemingly fruitful process. I wouldn't mess with it, you know, even if you could, you know, begin to document everything. Why would you Why would you change it? You know, like it's obviously created a really lovely, nurturing, you know, way for you guys to express music with each other. So,
Well, and frankly, we relied on a couple of folks that recorded our shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
like about 20 years ago,
wow,
that they documented some things that were of that era that never made it onto albums and stuff. So, so it's kind of a cooperative thing.
That's crazy though. Wow. Oh man. Yeah. Okay. Well, at the risk of us digressing even further, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to talk about? Any shows you want to talk about?
I just want to mention that Happy Apple, our new record, will come out later this year.
Great.
It's official on Sunnyside Records in the fall. We don't have an actual solid release date.
Sure.
It's called New York CD. And that will be coming out later this year.
That's so awesome.
That's been in the works for a long time.
Yeah. Awesome. We'll keep an eye out for that. And we'll, maybe we'll get you back on to talk about that, because I love that group. And maybe we can get some other folks on here too.
I would love to. There's a lot we can talk about. Yeah. I'd love to do it again for sure.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. All right. Yes, I know I had a really great time chatting with Eric. He's kind of a hometown hero to me. So it's super cool getting him on the show and chatting about the variety of projects that he's a part of. And definitely keep a lookout for that Happy Apple release later on this year, and any other projects he has going on. I'd love to get the whole band on the show, to be honest, because they're all just fantastic musicians and just doing all these lovely things. He didn't mention it, but go check out Eric Fratsky's Bandcamp. He has a few of his projects' albums on there. You can go support him and his music. He has a few things on streaming as well. Be sure to give that a listen. Any other project he seems to be a part of, I usually just know it's going to be great. So go check it out. I will take this time to mention that Relevant Tones is a product of Axis Contemporary Music. Find out more at acmusic.org, and we will catch you next time. Thanks. Thank you.